tell me about how did your life change from, you know, July 31st to August 1st or whatever day it was? And then, so how have your roles within the agency shifted? Has life gotten easier? And then what is the long-term upside for you? Because I know as entrepreneurs and as insurance agency owners, that's like the whole reason we do it, right? Is because we're like, I want, you know, this at the end. So I'm assuming that carrot is still there from PCF.
I got a wire transfer and stock the day I closed, but insurance by Castle is still the same.
Yep.
I have 3 employees only. They're still doing what they're doing. I'm still doing what I'm doing. I'm too young and I'm too busy still. If I was to retire tomorrow, I'm not a golfer. I'm not a sports, you know, athlete kind of person. So what am I going to do all day?
Sure.
I enjoy what I do. So they paid me a crazy price. They also now are paying me salary. I have a 3-year contract with them for that salary. In addition, I have a 3-year earnout. If I grow the business by 3%, every dollar I grow it by, they're going to pay me a multiplier over that. And that earnout can be, well, 6, potentially maybe even 7 figure over that 3-year period, in addition to what they've already agreed to up front. We ended up having 9 companies wanting to acquire my agency. When it got down to the contract, we engaged 5. And it was a great week. It was a bit high, a bit off. But we had 5. And I'll tell you, when I did my due diligence, I don't want somebody micromanaging. There were people in that 9 that would have micromanaged. I wanted to keep doing what I'm doing. Pretty much no change in the day-to-day. I'm still running insurance by Castle the same way. My staff has the same relationship. I'm their supervisor. My clients, 99% of them don't have a clue that I made this change because they still deal with me
right, or
one of the other people in the office. So there's no change there. So in that regard, that was the icing on the cake that made it a no-brainer for me to pull the plug now.
Welcome to the Insurance Stream. I'm your host, Abe Bowling, here today with Russ Castle of Castle Insurance. Russ sold to PCF Solutions last year. It's awesome to get his take on why he did it. Why? What was his timing about? Because, you know, we've been hearing on this merger and acquisition series a lot that people are staying on board, more so now than ever. And folks aren't, you know, really selling to retire. They're selling to grow. They're selling for all sorts of different reasons. Russ's reason specifically is fascinating, and we'll dig more into it here in our interview. But he wanted to maximize the sale price of his agency because these are unprecedented times when it comes to the value that agencies are going for, how much money you can get for your agency. And he thought, you know, is this going to go up? Probably not. Is it going to go down? Maybe. But, you know, this is a really good tax climate. It's a really good multiples climate. It's just an overall fantastic way to prepare for his eventual exit while still making some good money in the meantime. So he went with a company called PCF Solutions. He used John with Optimum Performance Solutions. We had John on prior in the series. You can go back and listen to that episode. But he utilized, you know, this team of people and found the perfect fit for him. So we will jump into our interview with Russ right after this.
Insurance agents, do you find yourself needing more companies to quote your clients through? Are you using aggregators or cluster groups and find yourself waiting on middleman underwriters for approvals on your quotes? Do you want direct access to more insurance companies without the slow, painful appointment process and heavy production requirements? If you answered yes to any of these questions, Insurance Professionals was built especially for you. Insurance Professionals offers agents instant access to top national home, auto, commercial, and life carriers. Our free multi-rater allows you to quote all lines of insurance with one data entry process, and quotes are available instantly. Our program provides direct carrier access to agents, so there are no middleman underwriters to wait on. Simply quote your insureds with our free multi-rater, pick the quote you want, and use your own credentials to log in and bind directly on the carrier's website. Our carrier selection includes Travelers, Nationwide, Kemper, Encompass, ClearCover, Chubb, National General, and more. We charge no upfront or monthly access fees. Get started today at becomeaninsurancepro.com. That's becomeaninsurancepro.com.
All right, I am here with Russ Castle of Insurance by Castle. Thank you so much for joining me today, Russ. We're going to shift our merger and acquisition series that we've got going on here from the folks doing the acquiring to the folks that have been acquired. Russ was acquired by a company called PCF in August of last year. And again, I appreciate you coming on the show to talk about your experience.
Thank you very much. Hey, anything to help.
So walk me through kind of the backstory. I mean, how did Insurance by Castle start? When was it? What motivated you to do it? And then, you know, how did you guys grow? And then we'll get to the acquisition here in a minute, but tell me about your company.
Sure. So my mother's father started insurance in the 40s. My dad started working for him as an independent contractor in the 60s. And then he went on his own in the early 80s. And I joined in actually last Friday was 30 years ago. So August 15th, 30 years ago. So wow. 1992. And then at the point I joined, it's pretty much a normal story. It was a Main Street agency. And we did that for probably almost 10 of my first 10 years. Anybody with a pulse we'll talk to, and we'll try and do as much as we can for everybody. At that point, I was in a marketing group that really was showing how niches would become, you know, if you want to make okay money, you do it. You're an insurance broker, an independent. If you want to make good money, you do niches. And if you want to make great money, even go beyond that. So for me, I dabbled in some niches. In the last probably 20 years, I've been doing habitational all over California.
Wow.
So we don't write everything.
Yeah.
You know, if you came to me and you owned a shoe store or a manufacturing facility, we're not going to talk to, you know, we're going to refer you to somebody, but we're not necessarily going to write it because we're going to stay in our lane of being landlords.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, and we did an episode last week with Michael Jans, and he was saying the same thing. Did you hear that episode?
No, that's who the marketing group was. He's the one who told me about niches.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So we had him on the podcast last week, and that's his whole thing, right? Is, you know, it's exactly what you said. If you want to make okay money, you want to make good money, you know, be in insurance. If you want to make real money, find your niche and get your customers to come to you and stand in line.
I'm the second person under his old company, Insurance Profit Systems, that won a car from Michael.
So really?
I know Michael very well.
What kind of car was it?
It was an Audi TT convertible with the Raleigh leather interior. It was very nice.
That is a
sports car.
That is so cool. Do you still have it?
No, I kept it for a few years. At the time, my kids were little, and I had that car, and what I was driving was a Yukon XL.
There you go.
Talk about, you know, opposites, but
yep.
It was fun for a few years, and it just wasn't practical for me. So I enjoyed it. We had fun with it, and when I sold it, my wife was able to get her car. So
there you go.
All good.
That's but perfect.
Small world. Michael Jans was the guy back in the day that really had me do a paradigm shift on how I ran the agency.
Sure.
What I was getting in my part.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He still runs a mastermind group out here in Phoenix, and we're looking forward to looking into to being a part of that. So, but you know, if anybody wants a testimony on whether or not Michael Jans' stuff works, you're sitting right in front of us right now. So tell me about your shift into habitational. How did you break into the industry?
Well, first of all, my shift into niches. So the industry I came from before I started working with my father was fire sprinkler, fire extinguishers, fire suppression kind of people. So that was my first niche. And we got pretty dominant. We had over half of all the people in the state. So I consider that fairly dominant. It was an ENS program. It was 10%, a lot of service, et cetera. So I was looking to segue into other niches. And actually, one of our big clients started acquiring apartments, and we were his one-stop shop for everything. And I have an affinity, and I, you know, today I own a number of apartments. I really like that. So that fit the niche for what I wanted to do. And so my story is, this is back before Google Earth, before, we had digital cameras, but not, you know, anything like a smartphone.
Yeah.
I basically went out and took a picture of every apartment in my county and every apartment in the county south of me, and started marketing. If you owned an apartment, let's say in Redwood City where I am, or my county, you got a flyer from me with the picture of your apartment and an estimate. Well, that went gangbusters. We couldn't write it fast enough. And then within a few months, we went statewide. Well, obviously back then we didn't have those pictures.
Yeah.
And it got to be too costly, but we continued to pivot and refine the program to where we are today.
Yeah. Well, and that's so great, you know, for agents that are out there listening that maybe haven't found their niche, and maybe we're coasting off the Michael Jans podcast. I mean, this is like the timing was not purposeful. I did not even know, but the timing for that story could not be any better in the podcast, because, you know, it works. I mean, we did contractors. That was our agency. And, you know, it was the same sort of deal. Like, once you break in and you're in there, man, you're in. And that's
I have a buddy of mine that his niche was restaurants, and he refined it so much, or you drilled down enough, and I could do a whole other podcast on niche.
Yeah.
But to delivery for pizzerias.
Wow.
And then he pivoted and he went into cannabis, and now he's doing, you know, that as a niche, but more delivery for cannabis. So again, drilling down.
Right.
We've talked for years, much like sports athletes talk, that 10,000 rule hour or 10,000 hour rule, excuse me.
Yep.
The more you get into it and the more you get entrenched, a niche is a niche.
Right.
What I've learned about niches and have, I could translate into most any other niche, similar things. And we could go on forever about niches.
For sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. And so you've got this niche in habitational. And so what year did that start approximately?
So I won the car in 06. So it started in 05.
Okay. So 05, you get your niche going. How long did it take to build up a really healthy book of business for you approximately?
In 06, I wrote $1 million in new business premium right off the bat.
There you go.
Fairly quickly. Like I said, once that flyer, and then as we pivoted, started really taking off, I couldn't write business fast enough. It got to the point where we were becoming more and more select in what we wanted, as opposed to anybody that called. Most niches, if somebody calls a niche, you want to write them. But we got to the point, fortunately, that we were able to start and slicing and dicing, that we didn't want to necessarily write everything. We could, but we would focus on what was the most profitable.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, that makes the most amount of sense for all sorts of reasons. But the so you get to write in your niche. When was it that you decided, because we were talking before the podcast, that you were like, you know, I don't necessarily like, I like the market conditions of the sale of an agency. Right. Yeah. But I don't necessarily want to retire right now. When did that thought process start coming to for you?
Well, I've always said, much like my dad never announced a retirement, but around 70, he's now still with me at 82. Thank God.
Perfect.
But I just turned 60. So I'll just follow in the same as him. Give or take another 10 years, I'll sell. The day I get a check, the next day I'm done, kind of mentality. And I had a good friend of mine that was, over the years, let me just give a little background, between Michael Jans and other groups, whether it's mastermind sales groups or agency councils on insurance agents, I've got to meet quite a few people, not just in California, but around the country. And one of my good buddies in Southern California last March called and said, I know this is your game plan. You want another 5 to 10 years and then you'll, you know, sell. But the way the market is turned now with private equity money, especially, you might want to reconsider about trying to sell now, but keep working. You know, just because you sell doesn't mean you have to retire. And I respect him. And so I really took a look at it. And I would say that was early March. I could have realistically sold in June. I purposely waited because of pandemic and staff that was home that was coming back, et cetera. And I didn't actually close till August. So it was a different mindset of saying at the multipliers of EBITDA that people are, or that, you know, companies are offering, is it going to continue and is it going to grow or more? I didn't want to be greedy, but I also looked and said what I thought I could get, that's more than what I thought I would have ever gotten up till that point. So maybe I do make this change and then keep working for them as long as I want.
So absolutely. That's kind of where I'm at. So you sold. So Insurance by Castle is now a subsidiary of PCF. Tell me about how did your life change from, you know, July 31st to August 1st or whatever day it was. And then, so how have your roles within the agency shifted? Has life gotten easier? And then what is the long-term upside for you? Because I know as entrepreneurs and as insurance agency owners, that's like the whole part of the reason we do it, right? Is because we're like, I want, you know, this at the end. So I'm assuming that carrot is still there from PCF.
So I have a number of, since doing this, I've learned so much about what you could do. I've got friends that have done the same thing around the same time as me that have, hey, I'm done and I want to do something different. You know, you have a non-compete with who you sell to. So if you do walk away, if I was tomorrow to say, you know what, I'm done, I'm not selling insurance, or I'm not using my insurance license for the next 3 years.
Right.
That's not me. What I wanted to do was, I don't want to do anything different. What my deal was, I got a wire transfer and stock the day I closed, but Insurance by Castle is still the same.
Yep.
I have 3 employees only. They're still doing what they're doing. I'm still doing what I'm doing. Basically, the parent company purchased the profit, and every month at month end, they want to make sure that that EBITDA number is still maintaining. If it dips, okay, what's going on? It hasn't. But if it were, let's say in 1 month, and it was explainable, okay. If not, hey, how can we correct the ship? Because what they paid for in that multiplier of EBITDA was my profit.
Right.
They bought my profit. The difference for me and what it made it perfect for me is I'm too young and I'm too busy still. If I was to retire tomorrow, I'm not a golfer. I'm not a sports, you know, athlete kind of person. So what am I going to do all day?
Sure.
I enjoy what I do. So they paid me a crazy price. They also now are paying me salary based on in the way I structured it. It's a commission percentage of my commercial because I'm 80% commercial, but it was the way I structured it. They agreed to. I have a 3-year contract with them for that salary. In addition, I have a 3-year earnout. So in ease of not disclosing too much, but to give you a flavor of it, if I grow the business by 3%, every dollar I grow it by, they're going to pay me a multiplier over that. So I've got a salary, plus I've got an earnout for the first 3 years. And that earnout can be, well, 6, potentially maybe even 7-figure over that 3-year period, in addition to what they've already, you know, agreed to up front. So,
and then you got stuck.
It isn't unique. There's probably 15 to 20 different companies like that. When it came to my actual time of going on the market, you've talked about it. You had John Persky. He was my broker. He makes a great saying that I heard years ago in my cluster. He talked, and I've since talked to him a few times over the last 15 years, is most people, when they go to sell their house, do they hire a real estate agent or do they do it themselves?
Yeah.
99% of people hire a broker.
Yeah, we don't even think about it.
Your business is probably worth more. Mine is, and I live in the Bay Area where it's not cheap for housing. My business was worth a lot more than my house is. Why am I going to be, I'll say foolish for myself. I know sure. Other people haven't hired a broker, but why am I going to be narrow thought of giving up a couple of percentage points to a broker where in John's case, I've referred him to many people. I would do it all over again if I had to. Just from the standpoint of he knows it, he's there. He's answering all of my questions. And I'm not, I think he actually got me a full extra multiplier on my EBITDA, which was very significant because I hired a broker.
Yeah, so I would agree with that. Sure. So now you're a subsidiary, and I know that's a lot of people go, you know, it sounds good. Like everything you're saying sounds great, Russ, but I don't want to go to work for somebody else. So tell me about how that part of the experience has gone for you.
So again, I'll use the process we went through. So when I, and I'll say broker or John interchangeably, because, mm-hmm. you know, while I would recommend John in a heartbeat, other people that are listening, if they do this, might hire somebody else or they might know somebody else.
Fine. Sure.
When it came down to it, I had 3 private equity companies that I had heard of that I was going to go to on my own.
Yeah.
And then I remembered John's comment. And I stopped. We ended up having 9 companies wanting to acquire my agency. When it got down to the contract, we engaged 5, and it was a great week. It was a bid and bid high, a bid off. But we had 5, and I'll tell you, when I did my due diligence, I don't want somebody micromanaging. There were people in that 9 that would have micromanaged. In fact, one of the 5, when I did my homework, would have come in and told me how to run my agency. I wanted to keep doing what I'm doing, pretty much no change in the day-to-day. And so 4 of those were just like PCF, and obviously PCF was one of the 4, but it was I'm still running insurance by Castle the same way. My staff has the same relationship. I'm their supervisor. They know there is a parent company. It's not just our corporation that used to be, but, and clients, 99% of them don't have a clue that I made this change because they still deal with me
right.
or one of the other people in the office. So there's no change there. So in that regard, that was the icing on the cake that made it a no-brainer for me to pull the plug now.
Sure.
And I can keep working as long as I want. The deal usually is, from what I've found from most other acquisition firms, is it's a 3-year contract. Then at the end of 3 years, let's talk. and renegotiate if you want to keep going. I know one guy that's been doing it for 12 years, you know, and he only works 3 hours a week. It's as long as the profit's there, they're happy, he's happy. He manages his people very well. So,
yeah. So what has come to Insurance by Castle via PCF? Has it been additional markets? Have you had more resources, you know, like payroll wise? You don't have to do that. I mean, what are the expansions that maybe Insurance by Castle otherwise wouldn't have had access to if not for the acquisition?
I can summarize it and then I'll drill in even farther. As much or as little as I want. When I did this and I was interviewed by each one and I picked PCF, they came back and said, how much do you want to do? For example, right now I'm negotiating how much, if they take over all my accounting, I don't really want to do accounting. I did it before because of my company.
Right.
How much if PCF does accounting, how much of my P&L is going to be charged for someone else to do it? It's minimal. If I didn't have an earnout right now, it's a no-brainer. I would be doing it in a heartbeat. But based on me growing my P&L, I'm mostly direct bill. So I don't, and I'm a preferred agency. I'm not, there's not a lot of E&S here. So I'm doing that balance. HR, all HR was given up day one. I don't want to deal with HR.
Yeah.
I approve days off or time off. That's about it, you know, but they also give me rein on how much of a raise to do. But other than that, the day-to-day stuff, there's people in HR to call. So I think the easy answer is as much or as little as you want. The best answer is in my HAB space in California now, it is changing. You know, we've had wildfires. We've had a number of things that are limiting my prospect pool. But because I'm part of this national brokerage now of, I want to say there's 100 and something locations.
Wow.
I'm able to get appointments that other people can't get or aren't getting. So it is more markets. I was fortunate that we have a vertical in the master in the parent company for habitational. So I'm talking to other people like-minded where prior to this, they would be considered competitors. Now we're all rowing the same way. So there's, I think it's as much or as little as you want to be able to get out of if you've got the right, you know, you've picked the right company to work with, as long as you want to keep working.
Sure.
I do know other people that have sold, made a great multiplier, and the day they sold, the next day they were doing something different. Yeah. Fine. That's up to you.
Sure. So it sounds like if you could go back, because I mean, you know, there's a lot of people who say, if I go back and do it all over again, like I do a lot of things the same, maybe I'd, you know, shuffle some things a little bit differently.
Yep.
Tell me about that for your position.
Well, in my niche, I'm fortunate, and it wasn't designed this way, but when I have done different talks at different organizations, especially sales organizations, I am over 3 times the national average of revenue per employee because of my niche.
Wow.
Well, and a lot of people, it's like, when I say it, I don't say it to brag. I say it because that's how I got to that, was because of the niche.
Right.
So when I went out and was looking, that was a big, you know, real attractive. John Persky, that was one of the leads that he was saying when he would call up whoever, you know, was looking at buying, was you got to look at how efficient this agency is. This isn't just a normal, you know, Main Street agency. Fine, great. But I still wanted to keep doing it. So that was a key, I think, in it as well, is that, okay, based on the revenue per employee, I don't need more people. You know, at some point I could, but so it, I go from 3 employees to 4. It's not like I've got 20 or 30 people here. So that was a big plus. Is that answering your question? I think I
could. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, if you could go back, is there anything you would change about how the transaction was set up?
No, not really.
Yeah.
You know, the big thing I will say is, that's where I was going with this conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Is I would already, in my own agency, kind of, there's a term, you know, you're shining the jewel, you know, the diamond. The diamond is your business.
Right.
I had, because of Michael Jans and other people since, I've always tried to work on that. So I didn't, when I looked at what my profit was, I knew what it realistically was. I mean, from a tax standpoint, obviously it's something different because you run stuff through your business if it's your own business. But I knew what it was, so that when it came to the sale, it was a quick and easy thing.
Yeah.
I do know I have peers of mine that I've referred John to, for example, one in particular, that they agreed that he needed to get back and working on his numbers for probably the next year to be able to optimize his sale as best he could, because he hadn't really, he makes a comfortable living. He's living a good life. But if he wants to make the most out of his business, he needed to get back on that accounting side and clean up some stuff. With me, it was already clean because we've narrowed. It wasn't done on purpose, but it's because we've narrowed to only so many markets. You know, we used to have 12 different personal lines markets. We now have four. So right. We'd already done the homework over those years for other reasons. So that was very helpful. And because of it, we got good multipliers.
Sure.
So
absolutely. So
let me interrupt you for one minute. I would say one thing.
Yes.
I live in a state. So when you sell your business, depending on if you have any debt against it, I didn't. I was debt free. So what I sold for, I paid through the nose in taxes.
Yes.
Where we are today, capital gains is 20% Fed. And then depending on your state, well, in California, it's 4 or 6%.
Ouch.
So basically, in round numbers, 40 cents of every dollar I sold for went to taxes. If I had known that I was going to sell prior, I would have bought a home, let's say in Nevada or Florida or a state that doesn't have capital gains in addition to the Fed, because that would have saved me significantly.
Yeah.
But the difference that I say to people is, I explained it to my wife this way. I said, for what the prices that they're selling for now, I had in my mind what I thought I would sell for when I was seven, you know, based on where we were. I netted that after taxes because of the crazy numbers that are out there now. And I still get to do what I'm doing. So perfect. I didn't have to play the game of, are taxes going to go up? They're never going to go down.
Right.
Am I going to be still as profitable, or will something change in the market? One of my major carriers is going to be changing my commission. That would have been over $1 million difference in my sale and my price. Whew. Had I waited. So there's certain things that people really need to think about. Even if you aren't old enough to retire yet, is it the time to take the chips off the table to optimize what you have so far?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it sounds like your agency, obviously, you know, because there's all sorts of different sizes of agencies that sell. And, you know, there's maybe the smaller ones that would gain access to more markets. And, you know, there'd be like the 2005, 2006 game changer it was for you, where, you know, you're able to spend the whole thing and still have those stock options to capitalize on. But with you, I mean, it perfectly made sense for your situation to timing. Sounds like it really couldn't have been any better.
It did. It did. And it's funny because it was in March that I did it. And so Biden had just been elected, and one of Biden's stump things, I'm not getting political here.
No, yeah, this is facts. We've talked about this a lot on the podcast.
Talking about raising capital gains.
Correct.
So I looked at the Fed 20% and said, okay, if I don't do it, and this was last year, obviously it hasn't happened yet in 2022.
Right.
And I don't know if it will or not. Again, not being political.
Probably depends.
But it's, I say it again?
Oh, I said probably depends on what happens here in a few months.
But let's say it went, let's say at some point this year or sometime in Biden's term, the feds go from 20 to go low and say 22 or 24. Do I want to still give up another 2 or 4% of what I've done or more and not pull the trigger and yet still be looking back? Here we are, April of 2022. So it's been over 6 months. I'm still doing what I did before.
Right.
There has not been any change. The only thing I'm responsible for is, once I close a month end, where is my EBITDA number? Mm-hmm. I still, you know, if I want to pay the bills, I can. If I want to, you know, do a ton more marketing, I can. It's all in, and I'm sure that's relative to who I was acquired by.
Right.
But that's available in many different private equity or acquiring type of firm,
sure,
like PCF. They're not the only one.
No,
I think they were the right one, but that's fine.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, to your point, like you're saying, you sat down and interviewed with them. That's really smart because, you know, you got to find, it's like a shoe, right? It's got to fit, especially if you're going to be staying on board. Any advice that you would give to anyone starting the thinking process about, you know, being acquired, selling, whatever, their beginning of the end of the phase out of their agency?
Sure.
What would you say to them?
Well, this is not a, I'm not the commercial boy for John Persky.
Sure.
I'm sure there's other brokers that do this. But in my case, when I called John, John's like we are in insurance. We're not practice quoting.
Right.
He said, in order for me to get started on this, it was a $3,500. I won't say cost. I look at it as an investment.
Sure.
And so what I've told peers of mine that have called John or that are thinking about it, I said, for me, it was worth $3,500 to put my toe in the water.
Yeah.
If I pulled the trigger, that went away and it was all part of his, you know, fee structure. So, but I did the $3,500 to be able to find out realistically. I thought I knew what I could get on the open market based on some research or what other people were telling me. And the actuality of it is we got a whole nother multiplier in addition to my highest number. And I attribute most of that to John. But had I not, I still would have been happy with the number had it not been that.
Sure.
Because John had done the work and he had put me through the process before we even went out to the market of let's look at your numbers. Let's look at what's going. He has a whole formula. And so do I'm sure others.
Again, sure.
I would say to anybody, John Persky's the guy, if you're asking me personally, but for your audience,
sure.
There are other brokers out there, and I'm sure they do similar of doing their due diligence, much like with selling your house.
Right.
You know, that's a good analogy. Okay, I think I'm going to sell my house for X. Well, when you hire the real estate broker, they're going to either confirm it or go, hey, maybe it's too high, or in my case, maybe you could get more. Let's do this. And they're earning their keep, so to speak. So
sure.
that's what I'm glad I did. And that's the advice I tell everybody is in this particular case, if it's John, it's a $3,500 investment to see if what you think is true. And if it's not, you walk away and it's a $3,500 investment. I dropped that in marketing without blinking. So right. That was a no brainer to me.
Yeah. Well, and the name Optimum Performance Solutions, right? He's not just going to take $3,500 and be like, your agency's worth $5 million. He's going to take, you know, he's too detailed of a guy to do that. He's going to give you an in-depth analysis on, you know, whatever you need to do to get to where you want to be. So, Russ, thank you, thank you, thank you. I appreciate your time. I know you're still incredibly busy, maybe a little bit less busy than you were before, but I'm sure making up for it in other areas. I appreciate the time you've taken to come and educate us on, you know, your process and what you went through and share your experience with other agents. Thank you so much.
Here to help. And it's kind of ironic that the Michael Jan story came up too.
It really is. It really is. I was like, hey, you know what? I just had this guy on an episode.
We're working on niches at some point.
We should. I'd love to have you back because, you know, I mean, I think we should get maybe like a power panel of niches going, maybe pull, you know, three or four of us in.
There was a guy in Jan's group years ago when I first started that really helped me with tweaking my marketing.
Yeah.
And I, for years, let me take you out for drinks and dinner and all. And his big thing was just pay it forward. Other people have helped you.
Absolutely.
And I repeated that many times. Other people have helped me get where I am. I'm here to help. I don't have all the answers. I'll give you my 2 cents. But yeah, whatever you need and we can do on niches, that'd be great. Because to me, that's where the big bucks is. You
know, I agree.
Efficiencies and you stay in your lane and you're not getting all this distraction. So,
well, thank you so much. I appreciate it a lot.
Take care, bud.
You too.
Bye.
Recording stopped.